Business Matters in association with the LYIT Faculty of Business. Do you want to learn how to tap into unprecedented opportunities in the food and drink industry? Then join our Higher Diploma in Food Product Innovation and Enterprise. This course is 100% online and co-funded by Donegal Local Enterprise Office. Visit lyit.ie for more information.
Hi, I'm Kieran O'Donnell. You're welcome to Business Matters. Later in the programme, I'll be talking to the co-owner of DPD's Donegal Depot, located in Letterkenny, Mary Ford, who's gearing up for yet another busy schedule. But first up is our Back in Business segment, and earlier this week, I caught up with the Head of Business Faculty at LYIT, Michael Margy, who's also President of Letterkenny Chamber of Commerce. As Michael explained, it's a busy time for the college as it gears up for the change to university status in 2022.
Michael, since we last had you on the programme in the Back in Business segment, LYIT, the status has changed and the name will be changing here as well.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's a superb brand name, Atlantic Technological University. And I think a lot of people are going to be very, you know, happy with that brand name, proud of it in some way too, because it's an acknowledgement of all the hard work by everybody over the years to have that standard. As I said to you before, you know, it's not like a light switch that comes on and we change the university. We've been at that level now for a while, and that's why when you go to an international panel and they review you, they're checking that it's not just a blip, that you've met the criteria, that that's the trajectory you're on, and you're going to exceed that into the future as well. So for everybody involved, it's really great acknowledgement and a really great brand name as well that'll be very strong internationally. You know, the Atlantic is a piece of geography that's known globally, and for us to have that as part of our brand name, it will be very powerful. But as well as that too, you know, people will have an emotional connection with it. All the way from Galway up to Malin Head, the Atlantic is a big bit of our DNA. It's a big bit of our communities. It's a big bit of our history too, when we think back in terms of how some of our communities were pushed onto the coastlines and had to live off the coastline. So I think it's a very, very powerful brand name for us.
It's been quite a long process, Michael. So what does the change in status mean for the college and for the Faculty of Business?
Well, I suppose on the one hand, I would say some things won't change, but it has been a long process. And I would say, you know, our mission is to be regionally engaged and nationally significant. And I would say as a new university, for us in the faculty here, you know, we'll be looking to be more nationally significant. Of course, regionally engaged, that's what it's all about at the end of the day. I probably think that international students, the number of international students that come here will increase significantly over the years into the future, because now you have a strong brand name. You have Atlantic Technological University and you have university in your brand name. Previously it would have been an Institute of Technology, and when you move internationally, sometimes people are less sure what that brand means as such. So I think that's going to increase. I think the number of online programmes, as we look to be more nationally significant, will increase. And I suppose for us, our focus in the business faculty has really been about, you know, connecting with employers and employees and work-based learning. And our key areas are, we've big commitments in retail, in tourism, in fintech, in innovation and executive and professional ed, and we'll be looking to expand in those areas and around the creative industries as well, particularly there in terms of design thinking. These are all areas that we're looking to expand. Of course, we're doing it regionally, but also it'd be nationally significant in those areas as well.
Michael, last year, because of the pandemic, the conference ceremonies had to shift to a virtual format. Thankfully, the LYIT was in a position to hold actual ceremonies this year. I know that's something that you were keen to see back and something that you welcomed.
Yeah, I mean, it's the biggest day of the year. It's the biggest day of your time at college, which is a very formative time, whether you spend 3, 4, or 5 years at college. It's a really big day for your parents or guardians or everyone involved or partner, and for staff as well. So it's really important, I think, to be standing in the hall that day. Although we had it spread over 2 days, it was great for everybody involved. And I think as well, there's a lot of symbolism in it. It was hard the last time when we did it virtually, but it was done very well. And I think in some way, people were looking back over the last nearly 2 years at this stage in some shape or form. You know, there was a lot of hardships. Students had to work really, really hard. Staff worked really, really hard. And there was a few times along the way, Kieran, where I thought we're not going to be able to stretch this far to help that student or whatever the circumstances was. And each time, you know, staff were able to get a workaround, they were able to find a way, and they left nobody behind. So it's a huge success story from a lot of perspectives. In one way too, though, I suppose, you know, it was the last graduation ceremony for LYIT, which is Letterkenny Institute of Technology, and 50-year history. You know, served the county really well. It's a big bit of our DNA and personality as public servants. You know, yes, it's about courses and people, but it's about using everything we have to help our communities or towns or villages within our region and within Donegal to get up to the next level. And now we look forward to doing that in a new guise as part of a technological university and all the benefits that will bring. But it's a big day and it's great to see it.
You mentioned the 50-year anniversary. I suppose 5 decades, there has been some progress here at this campus, Michael, over those last 50 years.
Yeah, it's all down to people, absolutely. But it's about the staff that's here. It's about the stakeholders we work with. It's about the communities that are out there. It's about local government, the councillors, the representatives, the business community. It's not just LYT. It's LYT and everybody else working together. And I think that's what makes a success story. I think that's what Donegal's good at doing. And I think that's why it has been the success that it has. And like that too, it's grown up and developed with the success stories of some of the larger FDI companies. And also, as you see, the success with Letterkenny, how it's grown and developed. It's a big bit of Letterkenny. It's nearly like a small town within a town itself. And it's going to get bigger and go from strength to strength.
You mentioned getting bigger. LYIT currently has approximately 5,000 students. Michael, there's been a 43% increase in the student number here over the last 7 years, which is a huge increase. Can you put your finger on why that is?
Well, yeah, I'll try and take that from a few perspectives. I think on the one hand, our programme portfolio has increased, obviously. There's greater diversity and variety in that there, so that's one reason. The other area, very evident in any profiles that we have, is our engagement with lifelong learning at a couple of levels. One, in terms of, you know, employment-based, employer-led courses working in partnership with industry, and you can see a positive correlation between the number of programs we've developed and that there, the growth of lifelong learning and students, the number of students, and then consequently the growth of the FDI companies and the corporates here in Donegal. You can see the relationship between them. I think the growth in online programs in the last couple of years has also really expanded that as well. And of course, we have our second campus in Killybegs, which is another very important aspect of LYIT as such and moving into the TU. And that campus holds high promise into the future as well in terms of the marine industries. There's a lot of engineering and electrical engineering expertise down there, but also the marine industry itself and the food industries as we look to pivot into those areas, and as well in terms of tourism as well. So there's a lot there, but again, none of that stuff happens without partnership. And for the business faculty here, that's something we're always very acutely aware of. You really can't do anything unless you do it in partnership, and you have to stay close to where the rubber hits the road, which is the skills that are required for getting a job. That's what it's about. You know, you come in here on the one hand, and when I say you come in here, you know, you're trying to transfer people from second level to third level. That's the first big transition. The second transition then is from third level to employment as such. But, you know, when you were asking me about the growth in numbers and the growth in part-time and lifelong learning, the other aspect is access, providing access to people. You know, we run a very successful certificate in foundation studies or preparatory studies, which is to give people access to third level education that maybe didn't finish their Leaving Cert or wasn't as good as they thought they wanted it to be, or something along the way. Life just got very busy for them. So it's everywhere. It's about providing opportunities to get people and our communities and our organisations up to the next level.
You mentioned making the transition, Michael, from second level to third level. LYAT recently hosted its Open Day, and I suppose that's the innovators and the young entrepreneurs of tomorrow. Do you ever have occasion to sort of meet former students who have gone into the business world and done extremely well?
Yeah, we definitely have that, and you know, engaging with the schools, and we run a DICE TY Academy, with DICE is Design, Innovation, Creativity and Enterprise or Entrepreneurship, and engaging with the schools is very, very important. But I think, Kieran, when you look at the kids coming up from primary school and secondary school, you know, they're different to the generations that went before them. I think they're more articulate, but that's just me saying that. I think, you know, for them, they're in that internet generation where information and knowledge is ubiquitous, you know. So I think back when I was in secondary school, you know, where was I getting my information from? And look at the access the generations coming up have to information. So they're, you know, they have world views. They're very articulate, they're very creative, and you know, they have good confidence in them, and that's a reflection on the superb education systems we have at primary and secondary level. You know, they're really doing a very good job there, and increasingly so, less are getting left behind. You know, our participation rates here are very high. It's something that we take pride in, and when we get comparisons across the higher education sector, for the people that we have here, we're doing the best for them.
I'm going to ask you to change hats for a moment, though, Michael, if you'll allow me. You're president of Letterkenny Chamber, and that term is coming to an end soon. How has the last 12 months been for you?
Well, it's been very different to maybe some of the previous presidents that I've had. It's been the year of the pandemic from the very beginning to the end. I think I've seen a lot in that. You know, you've seen people where they're giving consideration to their work-life balance, of their life balance. You see changes in their priorities. You see people looking to come back to live in Letterkenny or live in Donegal. You see people who are living here having a newfound love for their county again and getting out around it and the great outdoors that we have. I mean, in terms of quality of life, you can't beat Donegal. In terms of businesses, you know, just business have been superb. Superb in terms of how they've adapted and pivoted their businesses to be compliant with the public health guidelines, the flexibility, the speed which they did it, the generosity in which they did it as well, and the charity of time that they afforded to communities and supports they tried to provide them have been superb. And they've reinvented themselves in many cases, so it wasn't a case that it was just same business, except maybe now a bit of it's online. You know, they've been really agile, really creative about how they can pivot their businesses and augment them into new areas, which bodes well for the future. I think our frontline and essential workers, when I look back on it, and I think, where would we be without them? You know, in the very beginning, people were super anxious and even scared of the virus, and while other people were staying at home, they were still going into their work in the morning. You know, so where would we be without them? So, you know, the greatest gratitude to every single one of them. Every morning they got up, togged out and went in, whether it was health, whether it was retail, whatever it happened to be. So I think, you know, they're all the reflections. And I think the last one, I think, is just the general goodwill and commitment to people to help and support each other. You know, when the first waves of those pandemic came in and, you know, we were in lockdown, it was like something out of a movie. We never experienced it before in our lives, you know, 5 kilometres, no traffic, nobody about the place, everything quiet and down. I mean, it was like a ghost town at times, something like out of a movie. But people stood up, businesses stood up, our support services stood up, and you know, they did a really, really good job. It didn't matter where you were, whether you were up on the top of a hill or anything, you needed your medicines or you needed someone to talk to. There was people reaching out. There's people bringing you hot food. There's people bringing your medicines. You know, and I know we've been very critical of it, and I've been critical of things at times too in my role. But when you look at it overall, we've never faced anything like this before. And, you know, we haven't done too bad.
One other thing I want to ask you about, Michael, is Brexit. It's sort of been somewhat under the radar because of COVID-19 and businesses are dealing with that on a daily basis. What's your feedback from businesses and the Ricky and Donegal in relation to the challenge that Brexit has posed?
Yeah, I mean, Brexit was very much on people's minds and then the pandemic hit, you know, and Brexit hasn't gone away. You know, in some regards, you know, they say that, you know, it wouldn't be as impactful, but there'd still be friction. And friction comes with a cost. So we've definitely noticed in some cases price inflation coming through in supply chains across a lot of industry sectors. We also know that it could impact the tourism sector as well, in terms of fluctuations, in terms of currency rates, or in terms of ease of access and stuff like that. The agri sector and food sectors, particularly challenging there. We've some, you know, businesses here where 90% of their trade would have been exported across the Irish Sea. So I think it's posing challenges. It's creeping in. I mean, even for people there who would be shopping online, and now they find out if it goes over 150 euros. Not a bad thing in one way, because I would say to them, listen, the quality of goods that we have here in Donegal from our local traders, and they're all online now. Have a look around, and the quality of them are superb. I think Brexit definitely is making an impact, and that, coupled with the pandemic, Kieran, my risk in around that space is inflation, really. And it's a very simple thing. It's supply and demand, which is, if supply is cut back and demand maintains steady, then demand is putting pressure on supply and then prices rise. Okay, so, you know, is that disrupting supply chains between Ireland and the UK? Yes. Is the pandemic disrupting supply chains globally? Yes. And while we've seen that in some industry sectors, like particular sectors, like construction, you know, to do with the price of materials and stuff like that. More recently, people say labour supply. We've seen it in the hospitality sector suffering huge disruptions to their labour supply. But the bigger worry for me more recently is to do with when it impacts energy costs, because energy costs impacts everything. It impacts, you know, every business, because you need heat or you need transport. It impacts every home, and I think that's the thing we really got to watch out for. So I think what I'm trying to say there, Kieran, is there's a lot of disruption. Disruption presents opportunities, but to take avail of the opportunities, you have to be fast and nimble. And I think when I look back at that there, I really have to say that our local enterprise organisation here, Leo, you know, they've been really on the ball with the types of training programmes and upskilling businesses need to have in place to face the pandemic and to face Brexit as well. I mean, you know, if you just look what's up on the website of what they've been run, they've been on the money all the time. So there's plenty of support there, but you need to avail of it. And it's a time of uncertainty. I just hope inflation doesn't become embedded. That's my biggest hope.
And finally, Michael, looking forward to 2022 with hope?
You have to. I always believe there's thousands of opportunities out there, but you make your own luck, and you do that through hard work. And I think what we've evidenced through the pandemic, you would have to have high confidence in our businesses and what they're able to do. I hope they will go from strength to strength now, that this, you know, kick on when we look back maybe in the 1920s and the recession that was faced before that. There was a spurt of innovation and growth that came after that. Hopefully that's waiting in the wings for us now when things settle down. I think our industrial base and the entrepreneurs that we have here in Donegal and the startups that are coming are very promising. The one thing I would say though is when I look to the future, I think about comparable advantage in terms of a regional economy. And, you know, we talk about our transport and roads infrastructure. It's not as good as we would like it to be. we have a huge comparable advantage in terms of our quality of life here. We have a huge comparable advantage in terms of collectively how people work together here, how we're able to do things and achieve things. And I said to you before about this here, you know, there is a movement for people rebalancing their lives. There is a movement for people, you know, coming out of the cities and that there and looking to come back to more rural areas. One of the big trigger points for that will be access to broadband. And, you know, what you don't want to be hearing is that the rollout of broadband is going slow or that we're at the lower end of the list. You know, and people are only going to do that for so long in terms of thinking about relocating and then making the decision. And you want them here to come to Donegal. It'll help rejuvenate our rural areas or coastline, but you really need really good broadband to make that happen. So there are some of the hopes. I think we have, you know, rich and fertile ground in terms of the hills of Donegal and the people we have in here and the businesses that we have here. But there's certain areas then that to maintain or get that comparable advantage, things like broadband and that there are key.
And very finally, Michael, I know we spoke before we started recording in relation to the mica issue that's very prevalent here in Donegal at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, that's an issue too, because we talked about Brexit, we talked about the pandemic, we talked about the future and hope, and I think that's on people's minds a lot, businesses, communities, the homeowners, families, kids, and I suppose one thing on that there, I probably think that, you know, I mean, some of the footage and what you listen to, it would break your heart. It's as simple as that there, and you hear kids saying that, you know, they don't want to sleep in their bedroom, they want to sleep in with their mum and dad. It really is impacting people. And, you know, on the one hand, I think to those children that are out there, there's no greater heroes than their parents on what they're doing at the moment. And, you know, when your back's to the wall, you've no other option but to come out and fight with everything that you have. And that's what these people are doing. And, you know, they've... you know, are relentless, they're really structured, they have all their points, anything that comes back against them, they come back with an analysis done on it. And I suppose what I would say to the government out there, really, at the end of the day, to govern, you must govern with fairness and with high principle. And, you know, Joe McHugh called it out to say it was a moral issue, not a political issue. I think he's called it right. And, you know, to give a balanced perspective on this too, you know, it was called the 90-10. So, you know, in that regard, somebody was trying to do the right thing when it was 90 at least, you know what I mean? And people will say it was 60-40. Absolutely, that's the way it looks like it's turned out, because it seemed to be at the last minute, you know, how could you have that scheme and cut out accommodation costs? Where were people going to live? I mean, just things like that there. So hope for the future. For those people there, let's hope they're all going to have a good Christmas. Let's hope the anxieties that they're suffering can be lessened in some sort of way. And to those kids that are there as well, there's no greater heroes than their parents. It's as simple as that there.
Michael Murphy, Head of Business Faculty at LYAT, thanks for joining us on Business Matters.
Thanks, Kieran. It's a pleasure.
Join us after the break when we'll be talking to DPD's Mary Ford.
Business Matters, in association with the LYIT Faculty of Business. Accelerate your workforce by enrolling them in one of our lifelong learning courses today. Visit lyit.ie for more information. LYIT Faculty of Business, designed by industry, delivered by experts.
You're welcome back. Mary Ford has been running the Donegal DPD Depot with her husband Jared since 2005, having taken over the business from her uncle Charlie McDade. It's been a hectic 21 months at Depot 36 in Letterkenny, which has increased its drivers from 18 to 34 since the onset of the pandemic last year. With Christmas around the corner and a large increase in freight expected following last week's Black Friday, Mary and her staff are gearing up for another exceptionally busy month.
I'm delighted to be joined on Business Matters by Mary Ford, co-owner of DPD's Donegal Depot, located in Letterkenny, also known as Depot 36. Mary, you're welcome to Business Matters.
Thanks very much, Kieran.
Mary, can you take me back to the start of your involvement with this business?
Right. I started in 2002 My uncle-in-law owned the franchise because all the depots are all franchise owned. And he owned the depot and he was telling me that he was going to retire in 2005. So Jared had been working since 1991 with Interlink as it was at that stage. And I was working in my lovely job in the Letterkenny Credit Union where I had been for 18 and a half years. So I decided that I would take the challenge and I would join Jared and that the two of us would be ready for 2005 when Charlie was going to retire.
Big
and
step,
Marie. A big step, Kieran, it was indeed at that time.
Did you dwell long on it before you made the final
decision? No, I didn't actually. I thought, well, take the challenge because at that stage I was a lot younger and well able to cope with it. So, and I went anyway for nearly 3 years with Charlie and he showed me all the ropes and we were ready then in 2005 to go solo then ourselves, too, Jared and myself. And of course our own two boys rode in behind us. There were two teenagers at that stage, so they come in behind us and come down after school and helped us get the show on the road. And it worked in well for us.
Talk to me about the scale of the business at that stage, just in relation to numbers that you had employed and number of vehicles that you would have had on the road.
Well, at that stage, we only had 5 vehicles on the road to cover the full of Donegal. And we had inherited the 5 from Charlie. And it just worked then from there. And Jared Ford then went off the road then in September himself. We took over the business in the June and he went off the road in September and Jared Shields was our first person that we employed ourselves at that stage and Jared's with us since, which is great now 16 and a half years later that he's still with us. And of course Michael Duffy had been there as well and Michael is still with us as well, but we had inherited Michael, so that was part and parcel of the job as well.
Good to have a few steady experienced hands, Marie.
Most certainly, because you need you really do need experience in this particular job. I'll say at that stage you needed experience in that job. Nowadays it's different because air codes is very, very useful. Anybody now can step into a van and take a few air codes with them and deliver all the parcels they want. But at that stage, when you're out in rural Donegal, mind you need to have a bit of experience behind you to know where you are.
Tell me, where were you based initially?
We were down in the Old Town, down where Old Town Stores is now. And then about 2 years after we had took over, we realised things were starting to kind of increase a little bit in the transport end and delivery end. So we thought we'll move up here to the mountaintop. Kevin and Patrick Harley were just building a unit and we got them to build it specifically for ourselves, just what we wanted. And it turns out then most of the depots around Ireland then that were all getting built after that, all built theirs on the same layout then as ourselves. And we increased our staff then. We started to increase the staff then gradually after that. Well, in 2018 then we ended up with 19 to 20 vans and drivers to go with it. So since that we've put on 2 extensions onto this place as well.
So a significant investment in the business. So what's the size of an area is the depot now, Mary, roughly?
Oh, I'd say it's about 8 or 9,000 square feet at the minute.
And what did you start off with back in the Old Town?
In the Old Town, I would say, would it have been about maybe less than 2,000 square feet, I would say, at that stage.
So it was a fairly steady growth, Mary, in terms of drivers and fleet of vehicles, and that was keeping in tandem with the ever-increasing demand for courier service.
It certainly was. And then, of course, we had the recession in the middle of it as well. But funny enough, even with the recession, we didn't lose any staff at that time. And then once we come out of the recession, the whole thing spiralled in altogether.
Did that surprise you that you didn't have to reduce numbers?
Certainly.
And is there a reason why that was?
Well, I don't know what. Maybe people were starting to use the internet a bit more. Technology was starting to come in to play a good bit, and everybody was getting broadband in their houses and all. Maybe around that time, and it just happened to work in fairly well for the like of the courier business at that given time. But we didn't lose any staff at all, which was great.
16 years ago, since you set up the business, while it's not a long time ago in one way, Mary. It's a totally different world from now compared to back then.
Oh, certainly so, because it's all technology-minded, all technology-driven nowadays.
Has that made your job easier?
It has, very much so. It has made it so much easier. And even down to our drivers now, when they go out on the road, they have their codes and all onto their handheld scanners and everything, which means they can just tap a button now at the minute and it'll take them to their destination as well, which is great, absolutely great. But DPD itself, I would say, invested millions actually in their technology over the last while, and they're our backbone, of course. As I say, we are only the franchisee owners.
Yeah, and when did that name change take place, Marie, from Underlink to DPD?
It took place in 2008. We were all rebranded in 2008, and it left then that DPD Europe, we're owned by La Poste in France, and then it left then everybody in Europe. From you leave your DPD package and to Donegal, it goes out from Donegal. Well, when it's delivered in Croatia, it's still delivered by a DPD driver. So it is.
It's a big operation.
Big operation, it certainly is. So we would have 2,000 drivers approximately throughout Ireland, and there's 38 DPD depots throughout Ireland as well. And our main hub, of course, is in Athlone. And again, they're putting on another extension, I think, within the next 12 months anyway. It's their plan to go again. Multi-million business at the minute.
Mary, the pandemic affected different businesses and different sectors in different ways, but it had a huge impact in your sector.
Oh, it certainly did.
Take me back, I suppose, just to the middle of March last year.
We would have had about 18, 19 drivers and 19 vans on the go at that given time. And we'd got, of course, our CEO, Des, had sent an email around to say that everything, the pandemic was going to be starting and that people were going to be losing jobs. So therefore, all the freight was going to be down. Choose very carefully what drivers you were going to keep. And this is just kind of grin and bear it. It went the total opposite way, because everybody, of course, the like of the main people, the like of the Duns and the Next and them all, they all kept their online shops open. So therefore, if people were looking for children's socks or anything at all, they had to go online to get everything. And it went then from young people that would have been used ordering to the more elderly, more mature person. Then everybody was ordering online. It was the only way that they could get any goods.
Was that a big surprise to you, the fact that the generational gap was levelled and it was all ages that were buying online?
Certainly was. We didn't expect that at all. We had a lady over in Ardra, one of the drivers had come back to say that there were a lady over in Ardra, and that she was almost 80 years of age, and she had said that she had got her computer, and she was the first person that said that she had ordered online, and she hasn't stopped ordering online since. So I mean, that's amazing, like that she embraced it so well at that age, you know.
Mary, you've noticed a huge change in the trends and how people shop now and do their business.
Yeah, we certainly have, because even if you're looking for the studs for a pair of football boots, we've actually delivered that. That was the most amazing one that we ever had. A dad had come up here to collect a package for his young son, and he says, you'll never believe what's in this. And we said, no. He says, it was studs for his boots. He had no way of getting studs for his football boots, so he ordered them online, and that was amazing, like that, down to a pair of studs for a set of football boots.
Tell me, how frantic was it at that time, and how long did it take things to settle down, or I suppose how long did it take for the likes of yourselves to get used to the huge increase in business?
Well, at that stage in March 2020, we would have had the 19 vans on the road. We just increased right away to about 34 vans. And what we were doing normally was 5 day a week. Saturday was just Saturday deliveries only. We ended up having to put our full team out on a Saturday as well to try and cope with the volume of deliveries that we had. So we ended up going from 5 days to 6 full days from the months of March right to December. And again, a great credit to our staff that backed us the whole way and worked the 6 days, and was hard going on them as well as ourselves. At the minute, like, we're working with about 38, 39 drivers and 39 routes out on the road. So we are these days.
What's the key to the success of Depot 36?
Well, I would really put it down to a few things. And the first thing is the hard work by ourselves, Jared, myself, and Shane, Mark, and Shane's partner, Stephanie, has come on board now with us since last September. And it's again, family as best we can do it. And our staff are absolutely phenomenal. They work so hard. They never let you down. We have office staff here, Michael and Garvin. And they go hell for leather every day, actually, trying to take all the phone calls and try and sort out this in case there is issues, etc., etc. Because really and truly, consumers can be quite demanding at times as well, you know, wanting to know where their parcel is. The way our day works is every time our drivers come in here in the morning at approximately 7 o'clock, they lay out their runs both to the best of their ability then at that stage, and they scan all their run. And then they put in a time to say that they'll be with Joe Bloggs between 10 and 11 or whatever. And then, of course, you get the phone calls to say, I'm not going to be at home and things. So we have to take all those phone calls down here in the office. But as I say, the staff been just, they're extraordinary. Most of them are with us. Some of us, as I say, they're like a Jared and Michael. Michael is 20 odd years done. Jared is 16. And the like of Benny and them all have 12, 14 years, Benny and Keith. Great years of service, great loyalty, which is fantastic to have that. And then again, of course, the experienced heads in for the newer people coming in. They can guide them to the best of their ability. And our staff are really the wheels that keep the whole thing turning, really.
Just listen to you explain what happens here. It's very much against the clock, Mary, all the time, and it's also a very personal business, isn't it?
Oh, it certainly is, yeah. Because when again, nowadays, the customer really want to know what time roughly they're going to get a parcel.
Or exactly the best part of
it. Could be that as well, Kieran. But we try our best to be fairly close to that hour. We give an hour window, and most of the time, unless there's a breakdown or something untoward could happen, we would normally be within that hour anyway to come with the delivery to your door.
You mentioned the need to increase the hours from 5 to 6. What way is the business operating currently, Mary?
Currently, we still do we do 6 days a week, but on a Saturday, since things have kind of scaled back a little bit there from the months of June to the months of until now, November.
Was that as a result of some of the shops reopening?
Well, the shops reopening, okay. Again, it helped a good bit in that line. We still have a team out on a Saturday, but not as many as we did have. And we're back ramping up again now for this last 4 weeks now, because it's been Black Friday today. We're expecting a phenomenal amount of freight going through this place in the next week. And then our freight is cleared every day. We clear our floors here every single day, so there's no freight held over. So it's a task in itself to try and get it done every single day.
And are you on 6 days at the minute?
I'm on 6 days, yeah. Most of us are on 6 days at the minute here, yeah.
Do you find it hard to switch off, Mary, when you're working so long?
Yeah, because normally my own day and Jared's day would start at approximately about 6:30 in the morning, and then we're going all day, and Jared's on the road most of the time, and I'm trying to keep the office end here, and I do be on the road myself as well.
You're on the road, and I was trying to get to line you up for this interview. So I can testify to that.
I would spend a bit of time on the road, all right, myself as well, just taking a few, just to help drivers as best we can along the way, you know. And then, as I say, then the drivers all come back in the evening time, and nearly always try and be here for most of them coming back in case there's issues or whatever. And then if there's any of them, we own 38 of the vans that's here as well ourselves. So Jared then usually has to put on the overalls after that and maybe start putting on tyres or brakes in some of the vans if they need anything.
That's another part of the business that needs a lot of attention and needs constant attention when the vehicles are on the road daily.
It certainly is, yeah, because you never know when there's going to be a breakdown. But we do have a good team behind us as well. We would have James Call down in Derrybeg there that would look about us, and we would have James McDermott over the mountain top there as well, and Top Spares would be another one. And again, they're all great. Again, Some of that work doesn't be done till after 6 o'clock in the evening, and nearly always can ring you at 11 o'clock at night and say that one's fixed again now, Mary, come over and collect it, or Jared or whatever. And they're all phenomenal as well. They work fantastic with us, so, which is great. Great to have that service behind you as well.
Mary, if you had followed your childhood dream job, what would you be doing today?
Oh, I would say I would still be in my beautiful credit union job.
You seem to be lamenting the fact that you left the high road all those years ago.
You were there
a long time.
I was there. I was 18 and a half years there as a staff member. And then, of course, I would say I'd only retired out of the place a few months till they asked me then to come back on the board of directors. And I'm still there, actually, in the background just as a volunteer, and enjoy every minute of it. And I suppose that's where I would be going back to again, indeed, if the day ever come, you know. But loved my time in there. Loved meeting people. I would be quite a people's person, I suppose, and really did enjoy my time there and loved it all.
Do you miss it?
I certainly do. There are days I do miss it, all right. I certainly do. And the staff down there do be saying that there's still people coming in asking for me, which is strange.
Is there a person or business people that you admire, Mary?
Well, anybody that's in business, I admire them all indeed, because it's a tough game out there and there's a lot of hard work having to go into it. But at the same time, it can be rewarding at the end of it all. The like of John McElhinney that has his 50 years of business, and John like started off from humble beginnings as well, and has built a fantastic business up there, and you'd admire the like of him. And there's another girl as well, Lisa Colgan, that I know. She's a shop going there now, Get That Trend in Donegal Town. Again, started from her front sitting room. We used to collect from her in her front sitting room, and she'd be distributing dresses and things, and has built up a great business now. She has moved premises, and great business going there altogether. And again, a lot of hard work from Lisa and her mum Anne, you know, that really brought the business on. And you admire people like that have made a great success of themselves. So that
you must get to know a lot of business people yourself as well, Mary, through your day-to-day job.
You do, certainly, because you're on the phone to them all constantly. Again, if there's any issues or whatever, they would be, you know, they'd be ringing you and just wanting to get your advice, my own advice on whatever, or maybe if there's problems, to get problems sorted out, just if it's at all possible. So you do be talking to a lot of people, or a lot of very nice people, let me tell you.
Mary, what advice would you give your 21-year-old self?
Just to embrace business. There, if you're willing to put in a bit of hard work into the business, it certainly can pay off for you in the long run. And that's what we have really done over the period of years that we've been in it. Even though I wasn't 21 at that stage, I was still in my credit union job when I was 21. But it was a gamble, and it paid off for us indeed. And I enjoy what I'm doing. Certainly do enjoy what I'm doing. And it's lovely, like every day, to come in, and there's everything's new on every day's a learning day, more or less. And it's great, and it's great. I love having staff around me and trying to be as helpful as I can to them all, and it works well.
And finally, Mary, what lies ahead for yourself and your business?
Well, DPD is going from strength to strength, so there's definitely going to be no letdown in it in the near future anyway. And even though I'm at the age now, myself and Jared are at the age actually that we could be starting to slow down slightly, which maybe will be ahead of us shortly, but the younger generation will come behind, and we'll always be there anyway for any of them. And we'll just hope for the best anyway. That's all we can do, and we hope we have our health, which is far more important than the whole lot.
Mary Ford, co-owner of DPD's Donegal Depot, located in Letterkenny, thanks for joining us on Business Matters.
You're very welcome, Kieran.
Well, that's it for this edition of Business Matters. Thanks to my guests, Michael Margy and Mary Ford. Thanks to Kenneth Wilson on sound, and thanks to you for listening. If you'd like to get in touch with the programme, drop an email to businessmatters@highlandradio.com.
Business Matters, in association with the LYIT Faculty of Business. Do you want to learn how to tap into unprecedented opportunities in the food and drink industry? Then join our Higher Diploma in Food Product Innovation and Enterprise. This course is 100% online and co-funded by Donegal Local Enterprise Office. Visit lyit.ie for more information.